Welcome to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm Ann Fisher. For some, it is the mashed potatoes, or for others, it is the gravy, the stuffing, or the dressing, the turkey, or the ham. Whatever your holiday tradition, planning the Thanksgiving meal is half the fun, or maybe half the torture. We're going to try to make it a little bit of fun for you today. Today is our annual holiday cooking show, where we'll be covering the biggest meal of the year, from the salads to the drinks to the star of the show for many of us, the turkey. For me, it is the dressing. Joining me in the studio, Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and owner of The Seasoned Farmhouse. Welcome back, Tricia.
Thanks, Ann.
And also Steve Stover, food and restaurant writer for WOSU's Chefs in the City. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Question for listeners, just bring it on. What do you need to know to get the dinner on the table this year? If you've picked up any of the recipes we've given you in past years, like that chipotle sweet potato gratin, I don't know if I said it right
or
not,
yes.
But like I did, and want to rave and rant and rave, or maybe there was confusion, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out the Facebook page and post your question or your comment there. Let's start with the turkey. Apparently, there's going to be a shortage, but it's actually probably going to be more likely next year from the avian flu.
It sounds like that. We've got lots of good turkey options this year locally. So we posted on ediblecolumbus.com a whole list of where people can get a locally raised turkey. And so I've got a couple on order. I'm cooking this year. A couple?
Yes. Wait,
I'm cooking. I'm usually out of town. But
you're in New York usually.
I usually am. But this year, I was telling Steve earlier that one of my friends lost her father. And she's my dearest friend from growing up. And at the funeral, she looked at me and said, I can't imagine my mom only walking through the door. They live in L.A. And her mom and dad had come out for years for Thanksgiving week and stayed through New Year's. And she said the idea of that is just bringing
me heartbreak. So they're all from
here. So we grew up in Akron. Yeah. So we now have a combined, between all of our families, 24 people coming to the farmhouse. And my friend is arriving on Saturday with her family. And we are going to have a full, starting with a Michigan game and going through Thanksgiving. Full week of fun. So we're starting a new tradition with friends. Yes.
That's wonderful. Bigger the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. We can't wait.
And doing it at the farmhouse is so great because it's...
We've got all the stuff.
Oh, heck, you're doing it at the farmhouse.
We've got a basement of china.
Right. And you can do battalion-style cooking there rather than at home where it's harder to do.
Let's get out of my way. And how many things can I prepare in advance? And
this was funny because her father-in-law was a little grouchy about traveling up from Tennessee for the trip. And she said, when are you going to be with your three sons, your grandchildren, your granddaughters, and have Tricia prepare your Thanksgiving?
I would have started with the Tricia part and you could end, you could just...
And she's like, so put a smile on your face. He's like, you're right.
Yeah. Mm. Put your wine in.
Yeah.
It's all about family. It's all about big groups. Get the card tables out. And although you won't have to have a card table.
Well, I encourage people to have that kind of Thanksgiving, though.
Oh, it's great.
Nice.
And the setting, the Seasoned Farmhouse is such a great facility because it's got a big working kitchen and it's a really warm space. And I could see a family event there. Yeah. I think it would be cool.
Right. It would be super awesome.
Yeah. So I'm cooking.
That's wonderful.
I've outsourced. One of the people that helps me, though, is deep frying turkey for me in Worthington Hills.
So you're doing two turkeys.
We're doing two turkeys. And I was worried about the oven space. So we're going to do one traditional and one deep fried.
I've never deep fried.
I haven't either.
I'm still too frightened to do that.
Well, they seem to have it down, and he is going to spend all day. He's doing some for neighbors, and they have the peanut oil going, and the fryer's outside. They said for my husband to arrive with a beer, and he could pick up the turkey.
Have you deep fried before, Steve Stover?
No. There used to be a crowd of Boudreaux's, but that was too far to drive. So yeah. I'm a smoked turkey guy.
Okay,
I've never done that.
I like to brine them and smoke them
in the grill.
I have a smoker, you could also do it in a Weber. You just do it over indirect heat, and you have to keep the coals going long enough. And you would do a breast more likely, but you can do a whole turkey. And then you just it takes some time, and I usually do it the day ahead.
Okay.
And stuff like that.
And so if you do something like that the day ahead, how do you reheat it without drying it out?
Gently, gently, gently.
Okay.
And sometimes I undercook it and then warm it gently.
That's a good
idea. With some liquid in the area to keep it moist. Or one could go to Thurn. We were just talking about Thurn's.
Yeah, where can you go and just skip all of
and
this?
And City Barbecue has smoked turkeys. But Al Thurn down in the German Village on Greenlawn, that's where I was foraging today. breakfast sausage for the sausage dressing.
Uh-huh.
And a little Sèvrelot to chew on while you're sipping some wine. And then I was going to pick up some Nouveau Beaujolais.
Uh-huh.
You could spend the whole day foraging.
Sure.
Snowville Creamery cream, you know, stuff you don't do every day. And but that would those are two good sources of a smoked turkey or smoked turkey breast. And that's really forgiving and easy, and all you do is heat. There's something to be said about that.
There is.
I won't tell you, one member of my family called me at about 11 o'clock, and the dinner was supposed to be later. And she said, well, I've got things at about 185 now. And I said, well, I think I'd take that out and I'd take the legs off if they're not done and put them. She said, I'll worry about it. And it was a little teeny bit dry, but we won't name any names.
Well, not that we've never had a dry turkey on Thanksgiving. Yeah. Let's be honest here. You're listening to Chefs in the City on All Sides with Ann Fisher, my guest today to talk about holiday cooking. Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and owner of the Seasoned Farmhouse. And also Steve Stover. You've heard him many, many times as well. He's food and restaurant writer for WOSU Chefs in the City. We'll have a link to his blog on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. In the meantime, we'd love to hear from listeners if you have questions or comments about Thanksgiving dinner. Maybe it's your first. Maybe you're supposed to bring something. You're feeling insecure. That's okay. We've all been there, except for Tricia.
No.
was just telling us about how when she came back from Christmas, was it your freshman year?
Yeah.
In college?
Yeah.
She brought back a food processor for her Christmas gift. So everyone else brought back sweaters and stuff like that. But all right, 614-292-8513. The turkey, as far as roasting the turkey, I've found that I've really gone to dressing versus stuffing.
Yes.
Point being, you don't stuff the turkey. It cooks much better, much more evenly, and much quicker.
And you can control the temperature.
Yes,
right.
Better.
Yeah, I'm also going to try dry brining this year. I usually you basically rub a lot of salt, approximately a tablespoon per pound, but I might do more because it falls off. Rub it carefully
like a kosher
on the
type
day
of?
Before.
Okay.
Yeah, coarse kosher salt. Rub it. Some people rinse it off, some people don't, but that opens up the pores that makes the turkey or the turkey breast much more forgiving, like it would if you were brining.
Yeah.
And always, I think, a little bit moister.
So
and
brining
it makes your skin crispier, too, mm-hmm. if you salt it. And you can do it even up to 3 days ahead and put it in the refrigerator, just like Steve said, with the salt on it. Pulls out moisture, too, and that allows your skin to be extra crispy and crackly.
What are the differences between wet brining and dry brining?
Well, dry brining over a period of time really gets into the turkey meat. You're pretty much on the exterior. It does some of the same functions, but it's not nearly as I think it's not as effective. But I haven't done dry brining on a turkey before.
Okay.
I've done it. I do it on – I'll often salt and pepper a steak.
Sure.
Put it on a little rack in the refrigerator uncovered for hours or even overnight.
Yeah.
And that really intensifies the flavor.
Good for chickens, too.
Yeah.
Okay. To make the really crispy chicken.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, that's interesting. So let's talk about the dressing or the dressing. I mean, I still swear by doing either the chicken wings or the turkey wings, especially because they're so much bigger and they cover so much area when you're baking it to do it with that over it. You get all the moisture and everything and whatever else you want to stick in it, go for it.
I'm going to go a little French this year and stuff, just with everything that's been happening to my favorite country. I thought I would put together more of a French Thanksgiving this year. So I'm going to do a savory bread pudding. And so the only thing that kind of is a little bit different than our stuffing is it's more eggs and more broth. And it's just a little bit more decadent because sometimes you have to worry about the stuffing if it's the dressing if it's going to dry out or if you have enough liquid in it and stuff like that. But with a bread pudding or pain perdue, you don't worry about it.
You had me at savory bread
pudding. Yeah, exactly.
I think Steve's making it too.
Just the idea of that. But sometimes there's sections of the dressing that seems like bread pudding.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Because
it gets
moisture.
That custard and stuff. And so I've used recipes for dressing before that have eggs in them, don't have eggs in them. But, you know, with the bread pudding, it has the eggs and the broth. So that's what we're going to do this
year. A little cream
I'm
in
still
there?
Like, yeah, creams in there and stuff.
Wow.
And then like wild mushrooms and onions and shallots and sausage. Yes.
Do you cook it all? Do you cook all that together?
I will. Yeah. I'll cook the sausage first and then I'll probably sear the mushrooms a little bit first, but then mix it all up into the and with a bunch of fresh
thyme. And you could do that a day ahead.
And you could do that a day ahead. Absolutely.
Tightly.
Probably better a day ahead.
Yeah.
Just like you would
bake.
Like a breakfast casserole
or something like that. Yeah.
What a cool
and
idea.
Stuff. So that's what
I'm all over this.
I do have somebody bringing a traditional oyster stuffing or, dressing to also for the traditionalist.
Right.
Now, there's corn. I've never done cornbread stuffing. I like cornbread.
That always sounded good. I haven't done it.
I thought you'd done it before.
I've done it. I've done it this year for our Thanksgiving sides class, and I feel like that's a chance for it to really dry out. The cornbread is less moist, and we dried it out to make it more firm. And I didn't think it was as good as I wanted it to be. Honestly.
Yeah, I think cornbread always sounds good along with gravy, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, something to bind it though, because it seems otherwise it's kind of crumbly.
Yeah.
So
I think
it's a nice idea.
I think the texture of the French bread is really nice.
Yeah.
What about corn in dressing? Corn kernels.
Corn kernels. What do you think, Steve?
I don't know. I'm thinking outside the.
Well, I think one of the things is let's have some fun.
Yeah.
Our Thanksgivings are pretty much routine because the kids, our adult children, want the same exact thing every year. So that's why. I think you take a couple places like the dressing, maybe the vegetables, and certainly the desserts. I'm lobbying for a chocolate pecan set of derby pie instead of pecan, although you had me when you were talking about your homemade pumpkin pie with real pumpkin.
I'll never be able to do that again, I don't think. And it makes me sad. It was
so
good.
It could be the food processor.
Hey.
Listeners, I made a pumpkin pie last weekend? I don't know. It's all a big blurry dream. But I think it was last weekend that was the best one I've ever made.
I've been working on sticky toffee pudding for a couple of years, too.
Man.
But I also write it down every time I do it so I can read it.
Well, I did follow the recipe, as far as I can tell, exactly. I'm pretty good about that. With anything that you want, you know, the chemistry is so important.
Yeah.
You know, I try to follow the recipe.
Well, it sounds like it was either using the processor or that kind of pumpkin or both.
Yeah, that was the one thing is I roast the pumpkin, you know, scrape it out, throw it in the processor to smooth it out. And then I usually take it out of that and then mix everything else in with it in a bowl. And this time I mixed it all in the processor. And I'm wondering if that just gave it that little extra bit of oomph. I don't know. We'll find out because I will be doing it again next week because, of course, I'm just joking. I make walnut instead of pecan pie because walnut comes across nut is sweet.
I love walnuts.
As pecan. Mm-hmm. So,
since I'm so allergic to nuts, I can't say I've ever made either of those.
Wow.
So, So I'm making, I think, some trifle, and then we're going to have lots of pies. And
but
stuff
you could
too,
also add some bittersweet chocolate chunks to that.
You could.
Walnut pie.
Yep.
That's what I'm lobbying for.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that would be very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would really cut the caro.
The bittersweet. The bittersweet takes some of the caro away. The bittersweet chocolate. It's a good combination.
We will continue our conversation about cooking for Thanksgiving. Where are your questions, people? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I'm not kidding. It's not as much fun without you. So join the conversation and stay tuned. We'll continue our conversation when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides Weekend Chefs in the City. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Today is our annual holiday cooking show, and although Thanksgiving is time for chowing down, it's also a time of gratitude and appreciation. The problem is we all know somebody like Peppermint Patty from Peanuts.
What's this? A piece of toast? A pretzel stick? Popcorn? What blockhead cooked all this? What kind of a Thanksgiving dinner is this? Where's the turkey, Chuck? Don't you know anything about Thanksgiving dinners? Where's the mashed potatoes? Where's the cranberry sauce? Where's the pumpkin pie?
Indeed.
Too funny.
So not everyone treasures culinary creativity. We all know that. Still with me in the studio, Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and owner of the Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville. Also, Steve Stover, food and restaurant blogger for WOSU's Chefs in the City. But if you want to check out that blog, go to the website at WOSU.org/allsides, and we'll have a link to make it very, very easy for you. In the meantime, if you have questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I kind of have to go to Sarah in Clintonville right away because she's got an emergency. Sarah, you're on the air. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Emergency. I don't know if it's an emergency yet. But this is the first time I've bought a fresh turkey. And I'm going to be picking it up on Tuesday. I can pick it up Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. I won't be cooking it till probably Thursday morning. I don't know any of the guidelines for fresh turkey. I mean, if I pick it up on Tuesday, is it okay not to cook it until Thursday morning? Also, you mentioned brining, and I've done the brining in water before. I never heard of dry brining. And can I do that with a fresh turkey, and what do you recommend with any of that, with all of that?
I think,
or you can come fix it for me. Anyway.
You are in Clintonville.
I like your spirit, Sarah.
If I had the oven space. I think that either of the brining methods are good brining methods. I think they both add something to the turkey. I think it's just what you have space for. When you water brine, this is one thing that is easy to do, is to put it in a cooler, like in an igloo cooler, and put it on ice. If you do it like 24 hours in advance, you can add some ice to your brine, and you could keep it in the cooler for just like a day before. But if you don't have enough space in your refrigerator to get the brine and the turkey and everything else in, I think the dry brining mm-hmm. is a great option. And it depends if you want, like, maybe adding in a little bit more moisture, or do you want really good crispy skin? But you can absolutely do either method, and you can do both on a fresh turkey.
And you can also buy the turkey Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday and cook it on Thursday.
Right. And not have to freeze it or worry about it.
And you can start brining it on Monday if you want it with the dry brine.
Yep.
Right.
Well, you can do both.
Both. Either could start.
Either. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So great. Sarah, have fun with that. Thanks for calling.
Remain calm.
Yeah, remain calm. Actually, I exaggerated. She said she was just feeling a bit lost. But I think you need to start thinking about these things, you know, by now.
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of a critical.
The way to take stress off of people is what we hope to always do.
Exactly.
Because it should be fun and enjoyable.
And it's always good to start early. This weekend, you could actually do most of your shopping. You should make up a menu so that you have a list of things to do. You can do some things. There's a thing in the New York Times called How to Plan and Cook Thanksgiving. It's 10 or 12 pages, and it covers everything you could want to know for the amateur and for the more trained cook. And I think organizing is half the thing.
Because absolutely.
There's nothing about Thanksgiving, the traditional Thanksgiving dinner, that's hard. It's more about execution because you have more things and often more people. So you just have to think about it and plan ahead and make a list.
Jackie in Columbus, you're on the air. You wanted to talk about cornbread dressing. Tell us your secret.
Yeah. Well, it's not a secret, but I just make a good cornbread no matter what. And actually, normally, I put corn in it, just to let you know.
Got it.
And I do half and half, like a good sourdough or baguette toasted.
Nice.
So I do half and half bread and cornbread. Turns out great. You put plenty of liquid in. And then I do vegetarian, and so I put eggs, hard-boiled eggs, portobello, and shiitake mushrooms for the giblets, so-called. Mm-hmm. And I also stuff huge portobello caps on my bed of dressing for the quote-unquote turkey component. So, but if you half and half with cornbread, and good bread is great.
I like the idea of using the mushroom to create that extra moisture on the top.
Yeah.
And kind of have that seeping into it. That sounds good.
Sounds nice.
That's great.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Jackie, for that call.
Okay. Thanks.
Take care. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Any new vegetable this year that you're interested in doing? Or Steve Stover, you have traditions that the kids expect.
Yes, but I had this craving for celery root remoulade. It's one of my favorite things on earth.
Celery root remoulade.
Yeah, it's basically julienne or shredded celery root. It has a little bit of a celery flavor. It has the texture of potato.
Yeah.
But then with a little mayonnaise-y, mustardy, lemony dressing. It's just a wonderful thing. And it could be a salad. It could be a first course.
So you could serve it cold?
Yeah. Served it nice and icy cold.
Uh-huh. Okay, so that you're going to bring that in this year or no?
I'm thinking about it. We have to negotiate.
Or you might just have to eat it on Sunday or Monday before.
Miscreant offspring.
I've got a couple ideas on vegetables. I think that a Thanksgiving buffet needs some good salads with it too. I think when we have all the heavy, you know, potato dishes and the stuffings to lighten up the plate with some really nice salads. We just did a kale salad with a warm shallot honey Dijon vinaigrette with the fresh pears and the cranberries and everything. And that stays firm enough that it can sit out on a platter and it still is nice and firm and doesn't wilt. And then we also did real nice mixture where we mixed 10 lettuces together. So the radicchio and the endive and the watercress and all these other baby gems and all these lettuces made a beautiful mix with the yellows and the reds and the and then put the fresh pears over it and nice gorgonzola and did a French vinaigrette. So probably like two salad platters I'm imagining on my table. Mm-hmm. And then vegetables, we did a gratin of cauliflower this week. And I had always been shying away from all the bright colored cauliflowers because I kept passing them in the grocery store thinking, what's in those? The purples and the
Are
oranges.
They Frankenstein?
And the,
yeah,
that's what I was worried
this,
about.
Yeah.
So I researched it and they're okay for us. One has more beta carotene in it. One is
more
what
color.
Goes into cabbage and stuff. So I made a gratin with the purples and the oranges and the green this week.
Ooh.
And it was so beautiful.
Plus, you're adding color to an otherwise monochromatic meal.
Exactly.
Exactly. And I loved it. So I'm picturing something like that, too.
Ooh, yummy.
It was delicious.
And beautiful.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the popping out of all those bright colors. And then I did it in a gratin dish that had these wild birds on it.
Oh, nice.
And stuff. So it just,
and the kale's a good idea because, as you said, it holds.
It holds.
Yeah, exactly. Donna in New Albany, you're on the air. Hi, Donna.
Hi. In that clip you played a minute ago, Peppermint Patty asked where the pumpkin pie was.
Right.
Well, our family has a relative who is trying to stay away from gluten, and I'm wondering what would happen if I made a pumpkin pie without the crust. Is it going to fall apart? What's going to happen?
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say you could substitute in a gluten-free flour and make a small little pie.
But we had a thing called pumpkin love at a dinner party a couple weeks ago. And
a whipped pumpkin
kind of thing. Whipped pumpkin with whipped cream, and it was hot and baked. And I'll try to find it, but I can put it up if I can find it. But I think you could do it without the crust.
Yeah, well, technically you should be. It's a custard,
and it
should hold its own. Yeah. You could do... it also do it in custard cups as well if you wanted to.
Could even brulee it.
Exactly.
With a little brown sugar on top and brulee it.
Yeah.
And then you could serve it. You might need to cook it in a water bath or something without the crust. But I think it could definitely make a nice custard.
Yeah.
Okay. And I like the idea of the pumpkin loaf, I think you called it. Mm-hmm. If you could find that, that would be great.
If I can find it, we'll put it up on wosu.org/chefsinthecity. There are a bunch of recipes up there right now.
Yeah. There are a bunch of recipes up. So, but we'll get that up there if you can find it. Okay, Donna?
Thank you very much.
All righty. And back to pumpkin pie. Obviously, this is a big issue. Jackie in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I've always had a soggy crust on my pumpkin pie, and I have no idea. And you cook it so long, you would think it would brown up or do something. And I've been watching that Great Britain baking show.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Big on the, you know, keeping that crust.
Oh, yeah.
Is there a trick? I use a glass pan. Is that a dish for my pie? Is that a prop?
Well, I don't know. You go ahead, Tricia. You're the expert.
You know, I'm not.
Okay.
I let my mom bring the pies.
So here's what you do, Jackie.
You go, Ann.
Such a cook and not a baker.
Particularly with like any kind of custardy pie, it's really a good idea to just bake the crust for about 10 minutes in the oven first. Don't overcook it. Make sure you've covered the rim. You know, you have a crust rim cover, whether it's foil or, you know, one of those ones you can buy that I do use religiously. And then just for just 10 minutes, then pull it out. And while it's still warm, then pour the custard in.
That should seal it.
Yeah, it should seal it and keep it crisp at first. Yeah.
Could you tell me what temperature you'd use for the oven?
I'd probably use it just about what it would be. It's just
350.
Yeah, 350. You just stick it in for 10 minutes, though.
350.
Don't overdo it. It won't be browned. You don't want it browned.
Prick it a little bit.
Yeah, that's right.
It doesn't matter that I'm using a glass dish versus a...
No. I don't think so.
I like glass dish because now from watching that British baking show, I'm like fanatical. I mean, I'm always lifting it up and looking at
them.
It's so sad what that does. It's a great show, though, isn't it?
It is.
On PBS.
I keep taping it. Would it be improper to plug a gluten-free bakery?
No,
talking about it. There's a Cherbourg bakery in
Bexley.
On South Drexel.
Yep.
Just north of Maine.
But but any of the gluten-free bakeries, it's a nice idea to think about them if you do have a gluten, a relative who needs gluten.
A lot of people.
Yeah. A lot of people do, so.
Okay.
All right, Jackie.
Well, thank you, and my family will cheer on that they don't have to eat soggy crust this year.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm looking at all the callers. What do I want to talk about? Oh, well, here's Tom. Let's stay on topic here. Tom in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I always make it what in my family is traditional scalloped oysters, which is very, very simple. And the recipe is a layer of crackers, then too much salt, too much butter, and too much pepper.
Yeah.
And you repeat the process and cap the top with crackers, but here's my problem. My wife turns out to be gluten-free, and I can't find crackers that I like, so I'm going to make my own, and I want to know. I've got, blended gluten-free flour, and I have several recipes, but I want to know if anybody's got any advice.
You know, we make a lot of different crackers at the farmhouse. A Silpat. We always make our crackers on a Silpat, so a nice heavy insulated baking sheet.
I don't know
sheet,
what that is.
Or it's a silicone mat. You don't have to have it, but if you have parchment paper or you have your heaviest cookie sheet would be the best. Not a thin one, not a dark one. So getting something insulated under the cracker, because you're going to have a lot of butter in it, I'm imagining, in these recipes with your flour.
Can you bake on parchment? I have parchment paper.
Yes, you can bake on parchment. Yep.
Okay.
I think with the different types of flour, it's a little bit trial and error. If something feels too dry, a little bit more liquid. If it feels too liquidy, maybe a little bit more of the flour. Sometimes some adjustments need to be made in the ratios.
Okay.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you, Tom, very much. You bet. Take care. 614-292-8513 or email at allsides@wosu.org. Chris in Dayton, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you all?
Fine, thank you.
Good. My question is, I've had teeth pulled, I've got to have dentures made. What can I eat other than mashed potatoes and gravy? And mashed potatoes and all that kind of stuff. I want something different this year.
Well, dressing and taking Trisha's savory bread pudding theme and, of course, the mashed potatoes. And I'm guessing you could eat other vegetables, too. And I think
soup, maybe making a really nice pumpkin soup, or a squash bisque or something like that would be really nice. And I think your pumpkin love might be really soft and nice.
Pumpkin love might give you the love you need. Yeah, I mean, almost anything if it's cooked prop, you know, like anything, sweet potato, the sweet potato gratin that I've become addicted to,
dark
with
meat,
the chipotle,
the turkey dark meat, is
which is what I prefer, sadly.
Me too.
You know, it has more calories in it. That's me.
But it's so forgiving.
Yes, it is forgiving. Exactly. Okay, Chris, good luck with that. Let's see. Gabrielle in Delaware. Hi, Gabriel.
Hi, Ann. I was calling because my family has a tradition of stuffing that I've not heard anybody else do, and so I thought I'd just call and offer it up.
Yeah, I want to hear about this.
Yeah.
For adventurers. Basically, it's you know, bread that would be old or some sort of bread with some kind of heft, not like really, not to put it in the Cuisinart or something, so it's very powdery, but having breadcrumbs and then red wine, raisins, walnuts, and then you can add other things that you want. So you can play with the nuts aspect, and then you put in chicken broth, and you sort of make this savory thing where the red wine gives it a kind of bite, the raisins give it a sweetness, and the chicken broth gives it a saltiness. And it's really delicious.
Now, you said breadcrumbs. Do you use chunks,
well,
too?
Well, I mean, it's sort of got to be somewhere in between. So you don't want to just do the breadcrumbs because you'd want it to have a sort of heft to it. Mm-hmm. And then we stuff it in the turkey, and you can also put it around or in its own dish. But it takes those flavors of the juices, some of the fat off the turkey, and it's just the best. And I don't know why everybody in the country doesn't
do it. Well, it's interesting you say that because one of my most favorite bread puddings I have is a savory bread pudding, and it's tomatoes and raisins and white wine and chicken broth. And I mean, it sounds odd, but I had it and then I had to ask for the recipe, and it's absolutely delicious, but it takes some of that same method that you're describing.
What kind of white wine do you use with that?
I use like a Sauvignon Blanc or something, or even an oaky or Chardonnay has been good with it.
Uh-huh. Just avoid the sweet ones.
Yeah, no sweet wine, but but I think I could see this. I can picture this.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and the red wine is sort of illogical for a white meat, but it really works well.
Mm-hmm.
For those who want to take a risk, go for it.
All right. Well, thank you so much and have a great holiday.
Alrighty. Thanks so much. All right. Bye-bye.
We will continue our conversation. We'll get to some emails. If you want to send us an email, the address is allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question or comment about your holiday cooking, you know, really much any holiday cooking coming up. Of course, we'll be having our annual holiday cookie show in a few weeks, I think. So we'll save those questions for then. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to Chefs in the City on All Sides with Ann Fisher. Thanksgiving is indeed a day about gratitude and appreciation. Thanks to Earth, Wind, and Fire for that intro. And in my family, no Thanksgiving meal would be complete without the dressing, as I've mentioned before many, many times, and anything with sweet potatoes. Today is our holiday cooking show where we're laying out the best tips and recipes for gathering around the table. Still with me in the studio, Tricia Wheeler, publisher and editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and owner of The Seasoned Farmhouse in Clintonville, and also Steve Stover, food and restaurant blogger for WOSU's Chefs in the City. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or email me or us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also check out our Facebook page and post your questions or your comments there. Let's talk about potatoes. We haven't really, and we take it for granted, but it's very, very important.
You want to do sweet potatoes first, or should I do regular?
Mashed potatoes in particular.
Well, start with mashed potatoes, Steve.
Okay, mashed potatoes. Number one, cook the potatoes.
Okay.
Then drain them and put them back in the pan, not on the stove, but turn off the stove, but to dry them out a little bit. That's critical. Another one is to use a ricer or a mixer, but not a processor, or they become gluey. Mary's taking our ricer when we go to visit our kids.
Oh, that's right. You go to Boston for all this.
And then to hold the potatoes, this is the make-ahead potatoes. It's sour cream and cream cheese are sort of the ingredients. And we make them a day ahead. And then, of course, the mashed potatoes would not be Joël Robuchon unless you had lots of cream and butter in there. So
yes, that's
But the holding
saying.
Thing is the thing that, we often do. And you could also we did a cooking class recently. We did a little bit of celery root in with the potatoes.
Mashed celery root.
And that gave us a little bit of a celery-ish tinge to the mashed potatoes. Lots of cream, lots of butter, and sour cream. And
how do you reheat them, Steve?
Just warm them in the oven.
Okay.
We thought about doing breadcrumbs, but we just warm them up.
Yeah.
And you're nice. Madam Sweet Potatoes.
Well, I've made for years the Chipotle sweet potatoes, which is just the sliced sweet potatoes with the Snowville whipping cream, which is my favorite ingredient. I suggest if you like really good cream to seek out Snowville's and get it early because it'll disappear. Yep. There's not an abundance of it. But whipping the two chipotle peppers with the whipping cream in a food processor with some salt, and then spreading that over the sweet potatoes and baking it. And it just gives the smokiness of the peppers, gives a really nice flavor component, and really makes the sweet potatoes shine in a nice kind of spicy way. And
Point
we have a recipe online, don't we, Anne?
Yes, there is a recipe online. And it is an awesome recipe. I tried it last year, and I'm going to do it again because it's so easy.
It's very easy. Yep.
You know, so try that. Check it out.
And good for you.
And good for
you. Well, are you kidding?
Except
the amount of cream I put in that.
Compared to what?
At least it's you know, the sweet potatoes and
are
all that beta carotene cancels out.
And now that we're adding cream even to the dressing and the savory bread pudding.
I'm a whipping cream person. I completely get what you're talking about. I'm so
the good
all
stuff.
That.
And it's real, you know, it's real good.
There's whipped cream and pumpkin love, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gravy.
Oh,
gravy? Go ahead.
Okay. Chung in Columbus?
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Welcome back. I don't know if the squawk rot.
What's
the vegetable you want to talk about?
It's this actually. It's sauerkraut.
Oh,
I know.
Sauerkraut.
Yeah, you would never think to put dish of sauerkraut on Thanksgiving table, but see, I'm a Korean American, so kimchi is a little bit too heavy, too strong to complement any of the dishes on Thanksgiving table. But sauerkraut, I found out, was just absolutely tantalizing. It complements all the dishes because usually Thanksgiving dishes are, heavy on butter, cream.
Oh, yes,
all
they
that.
Are.
So sauerkraut, what I usually do is, I just buy a couple of jars of sauerkraut, rinse it, put some caraway seeds in it, and put a couple of tablespoons of apple cider vinegar.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
And that, it's just, and it also really is helpful for digestive system.
And Chef Hanke puts a hint of cream in his, too.
Okay.
No cream, please. It really, it's just wonderful on Thanksgiving. Everybody kind of like, what's that? It's like sauerkraut. No kimchi. No kimchi. Kimchi's just a little too strong.
Yeah.
And they just, people absolutely love it. They're kind of a little bit reluctant.
No, I can see it as sort of a nice relishy sort of thing to go with it.
I like to pickle my vegetables and put a crudité platter with some lightly pickled vegetables, but it's that same thing of the acidity with the fresh vegetables and stuff kind of cuts through all the other things.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like that.
Right.
So it's a lot of, fun to just see people's expression at first, and then they're like, oh, wow, this is really good. So try it.
All right. Well, thank you, Chung.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. Lynn in Mount Sterling, you're on the air. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. My question is about cornbread stuffing. I just found out I need to eat gluten-free, and I love stuffing, but I've never had cornbread stuffing. Is that acceptable? Is that gluten-free? And can I use cornbread to make it?
It's not gluten-free,
no,
is it?
No, because it has flour in it. Yeah. So you'd have to make your own.
With the gluten-free flour, with the cornmeal.
Cornmeal and gluten-free flour, yeah.
It makes me wonder if some of the gluten-free bakeries are whipping up some of these kind of staples for people. Might be worth a check, Lynn.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then otherwise, yeah, the cornbread stuffing isn't non-gluten. It's gluten-y as all get out.
Well, I thought it being made with corn flour with cornmeal would be gluten-free, but obviously I'm wrong. So,
no, I think the cornmeal is gluten-free.
Yes, but it also has flour in it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So you would just need to use a gluten-free flour and make sure you make your own.
Okay.
Not buy a cornbread. But if you made your own with the gluten-free flour, I think you could definitely make a gluten-free cornbread and use that for your stuffing.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Okay. Lynn, take care.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about gravy. Trisha.
Gravy. I feel really inspired by gravy because I feel like this is something that trips people up and is a stressor on Thanksgiving.
Because of the timing issue.
The timing issue and you really want great gravy. I think so. We developed this idea last year and we've been teaching it all this year also. And it's where you start this weekend, find some pieces and parts of a turkey, preferably the legs and the wings, and put them on a sheet pan. Cover them with a little bit of olive oil, salt and pepper, and a little dried sage, and roast them at like a 425 for about an hour and 15 minutes. And watch them at about 30 minutes where they start to collect some of the brown bits on the bottom of the roasting pan. And put a little, moisten it with a little bit of stock. And then at the end, you get all this nice brown drippings all over the pan. And you take off your roasted turkey legs and wings and put them in a stock pot then. And you scrape every little inch. If you have to deglaze it with a little bit of wine or a little bit more stock to get every little inch of the brown stuff, which I call the little pot of gold, put that all in a ramekin. Don't let anybody throw it away that's in your fridge. Hide it in the way back. Because they won't know what this is. And then use the other roasted turkey parts then with some onion and carrot and celery. Fill it a couple inches of water and make a nice rich turkey stock from scratch. And now you have the basis of your stuffing to have homemade stock for and your gravy. And so then you can start the day before because gravy is just a roux. So it's your flour and your butter to start. If you want to get really crafty, you can take the fat off the top of the chicken stock and start that with your flour.
Yeah.
And then you'd have the turkey fat starting your flour roux. And then you're going to add in your little pot of gold and then good salt and pepper and then start ladling in after you've made a blonde roux, which is just cooking your butter and your flour for about 5 minutes together, your little pot of gold, and start ladling in your nice turkey stock. Salt and pepper, and I think it makes a delicious gravy, and it can be made a day ahead, and then there's
no
scampering
stress.
Looking for the brown bits.
And then you can go ahead and save the stuff from the turkey roast itself for leftovers the
Absolutely.
Next day.
Make more or have it for leftovers. Mm-hmm. But
and you can add some of the juices at the last minute,
right,
too, when you're
right.
When
exactly. You could drain and pour in some juices and stuff, and it's just with those simple do ahead, I think makes it a lot more
Wonderful.
Fun.
I made a whole new batch of schmaltz.
Oh, you did? Look at you.
Yeah.
Oh,
good for
I'm
you.
I'm like, you know, totally
I'm
into that
I'm proud of you
now.
With the schmaltz.
I'm digging the schmaltz. I'm telling you. I mean, it's terrible,
it's good,
too, because it's good on a piece of bread.
It is.
You know, it's hard to save it, but it's
Thank
in the
you,
freezer.
Michael Rubin.
Yes,
exactly. Joe in Columbus, Naughty Joe.
Hey.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. I love the show. And I have a recipe for you that's not healthy or
yes,
safe.
That's why I called you Naughty Joe.
You'll fit right in, man.
So I had to find a way that kids would like sweet potatoes, not that they weren't sweet enough. So you basically make mashed sweet potatoes, and then you take a big marshmallow, wrap this marshmallow all the way around with the sweet potatoes so you have a ball with a marshmallow in the center, roll it in melted butter, then roll it in cornflakes, and bake it.
Oh, my God.
Joe.
I thought you were just going to say whip some baby marshmallows.
Yeah, Don't hate. I mean, you get that nice crunch on the outside, and then the sweet, and then that gooey marshmallow falls out the middle.
How many of these balls do you make?
Like, do you want to know how many I eat personally?
Small, or are they kind of like, the whole portion?
You use the big marshmallows.
So that's your whole portion of potato.
My gosh.
You know, but it's the same if you think about it. You make a sweet potato casserole and people put the little marshmallows on top and nuts for crunch.
Right.
So this is, I think the cornflakes make it healthy, though. It pretty much cancels everything else out, right?
I love the holiday cooking rationales that pop up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that sounds
interesting. Well, that's a good conversation starter,
too. And it holds
too,
together okay. It's...
Yeah, it does. It does. And you'd be surprised the first time you make it, people are like... Oh, deep fried. Now we're on a whole new level.
What do you cook it at?
I think I'd have to look, but I think it's pretty high. Like
maybe
350, 400. Uh-huh. Not very long. Want to melt that marshmallow in the center.
Oh, my gosh.
If you have to taste a few to make sure it's okay.
Okay.
It's like taking one for the team. I mean, you just have to do it.
Well, Joe, thank you so much. Nothing like a little sin.
You're welcome.
All right. Take care. Wow.
Bye-bye.
We got, sorry about that, Joe. We've got a bunch of stuff. Email from Lynn, who says they've made a crustless pumpkin pie for years, being gluten-free themselves. She says, we often warm it and top with a little maple syrup. We use a gluten-free mix that substitutes for the Bisquick recipe. So I guess there's a Bisquick crust recipe and just use a gluten-free mix.
Oh.
Email from Ginny related to crustless pumpkin pie. We don't like crust calories. Oh, well, come on. She says, so I use the Libby recipe from Pumpkin Can and just bake it as directed on the can. Right. Okay. So I've used 2-cup Pyrex dishes or a larger dish to give a bit of depth, like pumpkin pudding. I can have 2 helpings for the calorie cost of 1 piece of pie. Yes, but you won't get my crust, Ginny.
Right.
Email from Dave in Columbus. My family and I used to enjoy going to Hankey's on South Side every year, where they would cook a whole Thanksgiving feast and serve it much like you would at home. Fortunately, they closed a few years ago. Do you know of anywhere else in Columbus that does this? I'm looking at you, Steve.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think I'm pretty sure that I read that Spaggio was going to do Thanksgiving. And, of course, hotel kitchens. Since they're going to be open.
If I was going to pick one, I'd pick Gallery with Chef Bill Glover's Thanksgiving.
A Gallery at the Hilton downtown.
Yeah.
And I do believe Spaggio is doing it. There might be something in the paper next week about, but get your reservations.
Yeah, I was going to say.
As you know, Hankey's would sell out well in advance, and he did such a great job. People had a turkey to take home and stuff like that. And
wow.
He's also busy cooking for the day after, which is a guy thing that he does with some of the – there's more wine than food almost.
Email from Joanne in North Lewisburg. She says, we're going to our daughter's house this Thanksgiving in Indiana. She's making the turkey and all its trimmings. She asked me to bring a ham. I assume a spiral ham is best. What is the best way to prepare this? I've heard 7-Up or Coke poured over it while baking. Any suggestions?
I probably wouldn't do the 7-Up or Coke myself, but I would maybe make a crust, like a brown sugar kind of soy kind of crust to paint on it and bake it that way.
And of course, you could get a honey bake, but I would go to Thurn's.
Oh, yeah, you could get some great
and get
cottage
a great
ham.
Cottage ham, which make sure it's poached ahead or you get instructions to poach it. Or they also do regular hams, and it's so good that you probably don't need anything else. But some people do like a mustard crust where you basically paint it with
mustard. Brown sugar would be good, too.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody, thanks for your great questions, your emails, your comments. Joe, shame on you for that marshmallow sweet potato recipe. Just shame. And thanks to my guests, of course, Tricia Wheeler, as always, publisher and editor-in-chief of Edible Columbus and owner of The Seasoned Farmhouse. Thanks for joining us today. And Steve Stover, food and restaurant writer for WOSU's Chefs in the City. Thanks to you, Steve.
And the recipes should be up.
All right. Yes. We'll post all of those. Go to the website at WOSU.org/allsides. Here's the ever-classic Alice's Restaurant by Arlo Guthrie. It's a timeless tale of adventure on a Thanksgiving day in the 1960s.
At Alice's Restaurant, they'll walk right in, it's around the back, just a 1/2 mile from the railroad track, and you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. At Alice's glasses.